Israel has accepted an unlimited truce in Gaza. That was the reaction from Israel. We ask, is that another way of accepting defeat? Israel's war on Gaza, Operation Protective Edge, 51 days of Israeli aggression with Palestinian retaliatory rocket attacks is over, at least for now. Hamas has called the ceasefire a victory for the Palestinians, and his spokesman Sami Abu Zuhri says the group appreciates the resistance of Palestinians against Israel. In this edition of the debate, we'll ask, so does this mean that Gazans will get what they had demanded, an end to Israel's illegal eight-year siege?
Celebrations in Gaza after Israel gave in to a long-term ceasefire with the Palestinian resistance groups. Under the truce, Israel must immediately open the Gaza Strip's border crossings to aid and reconstruction supplies. The Egyptian brokered deal also provides for the immediate extension of the limit imposed by Israel on Palestinian fishermen. Palestinian resistance groups have called the ceasefire a victory for the people of Gaza.
Today we say to the Israelis, after the implementation of the truce agreement, you can go back to your homes based on a decision coming from Hamas and not from Netanyahu. We won today, and the value of this achievement is not in opening a crossing here or there, but this achievement prepares the way for the liberation of Jerusalem and the land of Palestine.
The president of the Palestinian Unity Government has also confirmed the truce agreement.
I would like to announce that we have responded to the Egyptian proposal for a complete and comprehensive ceasefire, which starts at 19 Cairo time. And we hope this will be the end of our people's suffering, and we hope this agreement to meet the needs and demands of our people in Gaza and provide the food and medical supplies. We hope a beginning for the reconstruction of all buildings destroyed by the Israeli occupation.
Mahmoud Abbas called on Palestinian factions to move forward with their national reconciliation plans. Critics of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have yet to react to the truce. They have already criticized his handling of the war on Gaza and believe he has been defeated by the Palestinian resistance groups. The 50-day Israeli war on Gaza has left much of Gaza in ruins. Over 2,000 people have been killed in the Israeli attacks, including hundreds of children. Israel unleashed its third war on Gaza since 2009 with a stated aim of destroying resistance groups and their offensive capability, and even to disarm them. But observers, including some Israelis themselves, believe Tel Aviv did not win the war. This latest war on Gaza taught Israel what many would call bitter lessons.
Well, let me introduce a guest for this edition of the debate. Author Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire, Richard Becker, joins us from San Francisco. We have president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane, who joins us from North Carolina. And also we will speak to our correspondent, Hisham Mana, who joins us from the Gaza Strip. First to Hisham Mana. Hisham, tell us about the mood of Gazans. Obviously lots to celebrate in this very important win for them.
For the first time, the people in Gaza now are able to breathe, are able to go out in the streets, not fleeing from their homes by the orders from the Israeli army, but they are going out in the streets celebrating the victory they have achieved via keeping standing still against the Israeli war machines, defending their home people, defending their families, and defending their right of existence and self-determination. The Palestinians now in Gaza have entered a new era by the power they have showed in front of the Israeli war machines, by the Israeli tanks, by the Israeli warplanes, by the Israeli drones, by the Israeli soldiers who invaded their homes, destroyed their infrastructure, killed their children. Many of the Hamas officials have been here talking to the people, thanking them for standing by them, supporting their resistance. The Palestinians couldn't have achieved what they have achieved in the past 51 days unless they could collect themselves and concentrate their powers against the Israeli war machines, against the Israeli project to kneel the Palestinians and achieve the Israeli objectives in eliminating the hope for the Palestinians to have their dreams, have their liberation. The people in Gaza now are celebrating the victory they have achieved despite of the mass destruction, despite of the blood that hasn't dried yet, despite the dust that's still covering the sky from the destroyed houses, mosques, hospitals, and entire neighborhoods. Gaza has the time now to decide that they are going towards the liberation step by step. They have started now by Gaza. They are looking forward towards achieving their dream by having the Palestinian dream, the Palestinian liberation, and living as the normal people in the world, as a community, as liberals, without the Israeli control against over their life, over their borders, over the future of their children. The people have said their word, we will not kneel to Israel, we will not compel to the Israeli demands. However, they are still waiting their demands to be fulfilled in Egypt via the negotiations, by lifting the siege completely, by opening the borders, reconstruction of Gaza Strip, and bringing it back at least as it used to be, moreover, as better as possible. The Palestinians also are looking forward to the day when they self-determinate the future, as well as they have been trying to stand on this land despite all the Israeli aggression and the Israeli occupation practices and the apartheid policy in the West Bank. Gaza is now lifting its siege by its own hands, by its own blood, by its own people.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. Hisham Manor correspondent there talking to us from the Gaza Strip. Let me start with you first, Richard Becker. You heard from a correspondent there, but overall, we're looking at what has occurred, and it's very interesting that we're not really hearing much from the Israeli side. We've heard from a host of Palestinian officials, obviously thanking Palestinians, but overall saying that this was a victory. And, you know, it's hard to talk about a victory given the fact that so many Palestinians have died, but we have to look at that aspect. And I think one of the most telling headlines, and I'm going to refer to one coming from Israel since we're not getting too many reactions, is that after 7 weeks of Gaza war, Hamas won, Israel nil. And that came from Haaretz. Was this a defeat for Israel?
Well, I think that despite the terrible suffering, the terrible death toll, more than 2,100 people killed in Gaza, 11,000 wounded, vast destruction, that Israel did not accomplish what it was trying to accomplish. And that's how we have to gauge things. Given the asymmetrical character of the battle and the disproportionate, vastly disproportionate power that's on the side of Israel, if they are not able to achieve what they set out to achieve, which is the destruction of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza and the subjugation, the complete subjugation of Gaza, then they have not succeeded. And the Palestinians, despite having suffered all these casualties, suffered all this damage to their homes and their infrastructure, have shown that they could not be defeated. And from that point of view, I think we have to understand that it is a victory for the Palestinian side. It's not the final victory or anything like that, but it's a very significant victory. And it's a consequence of the fact that Israel was not able to destroy that resistance. They were afraid of a new intifada in the West Bank. They have become very isolated in the world. And even their relations with the United States have become frayed. So their situation is not a good one. And the Palestinians, of course, is not a good one either. And we have to see, despite the victory, and it's a very important victory, whether or not the terms will be observed for the opening of the blockade, the end of the siege, which is, of course, what the Palestinians most need.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the terms of this agreement and even the way that this agreement has been titled. Shortly. Michael Lane, again, talking about victory or defeat, it is important. We have to talk about this, and I'd like to get your reaction, because as of just a couple days ago, the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said that this war may well go through September, but something has happened. I mean, even right before the truce was called, minutes before practically, you had one Israeli soldier that was killed by the retaliatory rocket attacks, this after Israel actually had an airstrike in Rafah, killing three Palestinians. But then the rocket attacks from Gaza killed one Israeli soldier. Even then, Israel did not back down from the agreement that they had made. So, back to the initial question, has this been a defeat for Israel?
I don't agree that it was a defeat for Israel, no, and I further don't agree. I don't see how anybody can call it a victory for Hamas. I would go so far as to say it's certainly a victory for the Palestinian people. More than 2,000 of them died in this conflict for relatively little reason. There was no real gain that Hamas achieved in this whole thing. I think when you look at why did both sides come to the table, it's because they both got something out of it. Hamas was hard-pressed to explain why they sacrificed 2,000 of their own people for relatively little gain, so they get a ceasefire out of it. Israel did not want to go in and finish the job, even though the support of the Israeli people on Prime Minister Netanyahu's campaign began to fade because they thought Prime Minister Netanyahu was pulling his punches too much. But now they go to the conference table. The good news is that there's something in the peace agreement for everyone, but they get to negotiate further.
Well, you say that you say that Hamas sacrificed 2,000 of its people. I'm looking at how more than 300 Holocaust survivors and their descendants have issued a statement recently condemning what they call Israel's genocide in Gaza. What do you have to tell them?
Well, I would not presume to tell anybody who survived the Holocaust how they think. They have a very grotesque and unique experience that they've gone through. And everybody is entitled to their own opinion. I would note that they don't speak for the state of Israel, and they don't speak for the Israeli people. They speak for themselves. Look, the important thing is that we're moving forward to a negotiation peace process. Both sides have something they're looking for to get. The most important thing from Israel's side is that Hamas agrees to and is verifiably disarmed and can no longer prosecute a war, and of course the Palestinian people want the blockade totally lifted so they can live a normal life and they can rebuild their lives in their country. I think those are the two objectives.
And should Israel be should Israel be disarmed as well?
Go
should
ahead,
Israel
Richard
be disarmed as well?
No.
Isn't Israel the great military power in the region? Isn't Israel the aggressor? Yes, they are. And they've been the aggressor in all these wars, going back to 1948 when they conquered 78% of Palestine, the 1956 war against Egypt, the 1967 war where they conquered the West Bank and Gaza, the invasion of Lebanon. Over and over and over again, we've seen this this small state that's been built into a huge military power attack not only the Palestinians, but the other surrounding countries. And yet what we hear, this kind of propaganda, this empty propaganda of Hamas sacrificed the 2,000 people and Hamas must be disarmed. Let's talk about who the real aggressor is who needs to be disarmed.
Michael Lane?
Well, I think the real aggressor is Hamas. You know, Israel would like to live in peace with its neighbors. Sometimes its neighbors make that
that's
impossible.
That's a joke.
No, that's actually the facts of the thing. Look, until Hamas
No, no, this is the constant
Israel,
refrain.
Israel
wants peace, but it can't find a partner for peace. Israel wants the land of Palestine, all of the land of Palestine.
I think the record reflects that that's actually not true.
Well, let's look at this, Richard.
Oh, really? What are all those settlements doing in the West Bank?
Well, you know, that's subject to negotiation, isn't it?
But that is one of the major issues there, Michael Lane.
It's theft.
Well, look, here's the thing. This conflict started when Hamas started indiscriminately shooting rockets into Israel. Israel had a right to defend herself.
More propaganda.
She did so aggressively.
That's just propaganda.
And as long as Hamas doesn't shoot any more rockets, I think the ceasefire will hold.
Well, Richard Becker.
Yeah, the Israeli idea is that the Palestinians in Gaza should just die slowly and not resist. They shouldn't do anything. Just die under the siege. Just die. That's the Israeli real attitude toward Gaza and toward the Palestinians.
But there's a difference now.
I actually don't think that's the case. I think if Hamas agrees in the negotiations to disarm, you can see the blossoming of a new state over there that will have all of the advantages that Israel has, that Lebanon had.
Looks like we just got a frozen screen there from Michael Lane.
The blockade was put into place. The blockade was put into place in February 2006 because Hamas won an election. It wasn't because of rocket fire. You should check the historical record. There was a meeting of the Security Council of Israel in February of 2006, and they said, it's going to be like a trip to the dietitian. The Palestinians are going to get a lot thinner, but they're not going to die. And then they all laughed about this, and they put the siege into place then. You should get your facts straight, because what you're saying is just Israeli propaganda.
Very well.
It's not what I said, Mr. Becker. What I said was this particular conflict started with the rockets, not the blockade back in 2006. So you should not put words in my mouth. Look,
the blockade is killing
Hamas
the people.
For importing weapons that they will use in an aggressive manner against Israel. Until Hamas agrees to disarm and agrees not to import any more of the weapon types that they have, you're going to have that blockade continue, and that's just the fact of the matter.
No. Let me just enlighten both of you. We just had a press conference that we aired from Beirut, in which we had one of the Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad that came out and said point specifically that the arms of Hamas or the Palestinian factions overall is not going to be up for negotiations. I am sure that message was relayed to Israel. And again, that's the point, Michael Lane, when we talk about the fact that that's not going to be up for discussion. Israel is aware of it, but yet you have the blockade that's going to be lifted, at least for the time of these agreement or this these talks take place, with the possibility of the siege being lifted, again, up for talks, that shows that Israel has given in. Isn't that another form of defeat? And it's the only way to look at it. I can't see why Israel then would come to the negotiating table. Michael Lane.
Well, let me say I am surprised, and this is new information you're giving me, that there is not going to be a discussion in the negotiations as to the disarming of Hamas. That clearly is one of Israel's objectives, and if they agree to come to the table with that topic off the table, then they have not gotten as much out of this as they wanted to. So that is that is an advantage to Hamas in this particular deal if that is off the table. We still need to see the rest of the details to see what each side did give up and what each side agreed to. But I will agree that without a discussion as to how to get Hamas to disarm, that is a significant advantage for them.
Well, Richard Becker, let's look at that aspect and explore it. I mean, we look at the 2006 war that happened between Hezbollah and Israel, and we could see that there's supposed to be this demarcation there, where you have this international group from the UN that monitors that area, kind of a buffer zone there. There's been talks about that. Perhaps that is one of the things that may be discussed. We don't know at this point. But the point specifically, Ramzan Abdullah, the Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad, said that disarming of Hamas is not going to be up for negotiations. Yet, again, the siege and the other aspects of the borders being opened up is going to be up for discussion. Something, however, has pushed Israel to come to the table. I'm trying to figure out what that is. Mahmoud Abbas said maybe it's because, he said that both the United States and Qatar had a role in bringing this truce about. Do you think those two parties in particular may have had something to do with Prime Minister Netanyahu agreeing to this ceasefire?
I think that the main reason, they may have had played a role, but I think that the main reason was that Israel was not able to accomplish what it was trying to accomplish. And we should remember that they withdrew their troops from inside Gaza to the border of Gaza a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a little bit longer, because they were taking casualties, far more casualties than they had in the 2008-2009 so-called Operation Cast Lead. They were far fewer casualties, of course, than the Palestinian side, but they were very significant. And I think that was also the cause of the withdrawal, the end of the war, the ceasefire that took place between Lebanon and Israel, as you mentioned, several years ago. It was the fact that they were unable to achieve the victory that they had been able to achieve. They were in earlier battles, and they were suffering casualties, and there was no prospect that even if they stepped up the number of troops, either in Gaza now or back then in Lebanon, that they were going to be able to achieve their victory. And they were very isolated. Millions of people came out all over the world this time around protesting against these just massive Israeli airstrikes, and very cowardly airstrikes, I should say. There's no air defense system there. They're just able to bomb at will and shell at
will. Let me come in, Richard Becker, to get two quick answers. First from Michael Lane. Michael Lane, I just checked. Israel said the framework includes an immediate unconditional ceasefire, but we will be raising our concerns about the demilitarization and preventing Hamas from rearming. And they will be raising their concerns. This has been on the framework. So I'm not too sure what to make of that when you have one of the leading Palestinian officials from the Islamic Jihad, the Secretary General, actually, saying that's not up for negotiation. But there's no way that Hamas or the Palestinian factions are going to disarm. Do you think that this truce is going to lead to a permanent agreement? Quickly, if you can, 30 seconds.
No, I don't think we're going to get a permanent agreement. I think that this is probably going to keep the lid on the explosive situation for a period of time, but not forever. And we're going to wind up with a very uneasy coexistence until it blows up again.
Richard Becker, 30 seconds, please. Permanent agreement or not after these truce talks?
Well, I think that that's very hard, very difficult to say. I mean, I think it's very important to point out that the Israelis are the oppressors, and the Palestinians are the oppressed, whose land has been stolen, who are confined to these refugee camps and confined under siege. And the idea that they should have to be the ones to disarm, but the oppressor should be able to maintain its vast arsenal and air force and navy and army and all that, it's just ludicrous.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're unfortunately fresh out of time. I do apologize. Thank you very much. Richard Becker from the Answer Coalition, author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. And Michael Lane, thank you, president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, talking to us there from North Carolina. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mika Vitale and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.